I'm WBJC's Interim General Manager, Jonathan Polevsky. The end of June marks the end of our fiscal year, and I'd like to thank everyone who pledged during this time to support WBJC and everyone who listened. I thought it might be nice to say thank you by highlighting the life and works of a different composer each day until June the 30th. Let's call it 30 in 30. By the way, if you didn't make a pledge and you'd still like to be part of our fundraising efforts here at WBJC, you can go to wbjc.com. Our composer was born in St. Petersburg in 1906. His paternal grandfather was an actual revolutionary who was deported to Siberia in the political repression that followed the assassination of Tsar Alexander II. His father was able to return to the capital, where he studied mathematics and physics and worked as an engineer. St. Petersburg, which would then become Petrograd and then Leningrad, would always be dear to our composer's heart. Like so many promising musicians, he showed great keyboard prowess and possessed a fine musical memory and an extraordinary ear. Like Gustav Mahler, one of his earliest pieces, age 12, was a funeral march, but unlike Mahler, his funeral march for two members of the Constitutional Democratic Party who were murdered by Bolsheviks was inspired by politics. In fact, the composer's entire life and pretty much everything else in the newly created Soviet Union would have a political aspect to it. Then it was off to St. Petersburg, now Petrograd Conservatory. Our composer mystified his composition teacher, Maximilian Steinberg, by being far more interested in the cutting-edge music of Stravinsky and Prokofiev than the traditional fare of Rimsky-Korsakov and Tchaikovsky. While he failed his 1926 exam in Marxist ideology, his First Symphony of 1926 launched his domestic and later international career. While Steinberg was happy for his student's success, he confessed that he understood little of Dmitri Shostakovich's First Symphony. Shostakovich remembers the day of its premiere as being one of the happiest days of his life. The First Symphony of a 20-year-old composer was soon performed by Bruno Walter in Berlin and Leopold Stokowski in Philadelphia. Shostakovich's next two symphonies were both political and experimental. Symphony 2 was entitled 2 October and was written to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the 1917 revolution. The third symphony, the 1st of May, was written to commemorate the eponymous holiday, a socialist holiday that was, by Zeve, created not in Russia, but in this country. In general, things were going quite well for our young proletarian composer until January 26, 1936. Shostakovich had written an opera called Lady Macbeth of the Mtsensk District. The opera, which was cutting edge in terms of both its music and social commentary, was well received by both the public and Soviet officials. Sadly for Shostakovich, January 26, 1936, was the night when Joseph Stalin, accompanied by Molotov, Zhdanov, and Mikoyan, went to the opera. Shostakovich sat and watched as the supreme leader cringed every time the brass played too loudly for his tastes, and also saw Stalin and his cronies laugh their way through the love scene. Two days later, later, there appeared in Pravda an editorial entitled Muddle Instead of Music, which referred to the opera as, quote, a deliberately dissonant, muddled stream of sounds that quacks, hoots, pants, and gasps. This editorial, which everyone knew was written by Stalin, summed up the opera and the career of Shostakovich with a warning. The power of good music to infect the masses has been sacrificed to a petty bourgeois formalist attempt to create originality through cheap clowning. It is a game of clever ingenuity that may end very badly. Make no mistake about it, mes petits amis, very badly meant the gulag, or worse. In a flash, Shostakovich lost many of his official commissions and three-quarters of his income. He requested a meeting with Stalin to explain himself, which was not granted. His friends disappeared, and his Fourth Symphony, which was in rehearsal, was quickly withdrawn. There was nothing to do but hunker down and write lots of film music. Stalin loved the movies. Shostakovich returned to favor on November 21, 1937, with the premiere of his Symphony No. 5. Shortly before the premiere, the composer wrote in the Moscow evening paper that the symphony was a Soviet composer's response to justified criticism. Whether this was a strategy or a truthful apology, it worked. Shostakovich was restored to favor and avoided the horrible consequences experienced by so many Russians who ran afoul of the regime at this time. During the war years, the composer became a symbol for Russian resistance to the Nazi invasion. Shostakovich remained in Leningrad for much of the siege and endured the constant bombings and starvation. He became a fire marshal, and there's a famous picture of him patrolling the rooftops of his native city. He also wrote the musical response of the Russian people to the German invasion. The Seventh Symphony, the Leningrad Symphony, was a musical message of defiance. The score was smuggled out of Leningrad and flown to the United States, where it was broadcast nationally on the radio by the NBC Symphony. Shostakovich even appeared on the cover of Time magazine wearing his fire marshal's uniform. Once the war was over, Shostakovich again annoyed Stalin, this time with his Ninth Symphony. Stalin was expecting something enormous and celebratory to mark the occasion of the Soviet victory. He was hoping for something along the lines of Beethoven's, Schubert's, or Dvorak's Ninth. Something long, epic, and hopefully with a chorus proclaiming Soviet-approved words. What he got was a 30-minute light work for small orchestra with copious humorous touches more reminiscent of Haydn. In 1948, Stalin, and especially his artistic henchman Andrei Zhdanov, were done. The tolerance for dissonance that marked the works in the war years was over, and the regime was now insisting that composers closely adhere to the doctrines of socialist realism. Not only was Shostakovich condemned, but also leading Soviet composers Prokofiev and Khachaturian were strongly admonished. Many of the works Shostakovich wrote at this time, like his Violin Concerto No. 1 and the songs from Jewish folk poetry, were placed in a drawer and not premiered until after Stalin's death in 1953. The demise of the Soviet leader was a huge relief for Shostakovich and for Russia in general. Once Nikita Khrushchev had removed all of his rivals from power, Shostakovich had much more artistic freedom and was restored to the good graces of the communist system. If we had enormous amounts of time, I would entertain you with Shostakovich's late symphonies and string quartets, but sadly, it behooves me to say goodbye and leave you to your own devices. Get thee to YouTube and find more amazing works by this amazing composer, Dmitri Dmitrievich Shostakovich. I thank you very much for listening to 30 in 30 today. It's been a great pleasure, and I wish you a good day. If you'd like to support WBJC's musical efforts, you can go online to wbjc.com. Ad volatibi ocis viosni.